The test is in four parts, part 1, part 2, part 3, and part 4. Now look at part 1.
Part 1.
You will hear a conversation between a cashier in a bank and a customer. The customer is asking for advice about traveler's checks. First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 3. Now we shall begin. You should answer the questions as you listen, because you will not hear the recording a second time. Listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 3.
Good morning. How can I help you?
Yes, hello. I'm going away on holiday next month and I was wondering if you could give me some advice about traveller's checks.
Yes, of course. Where are you off to? Anywhere nice?
To France. To Paris for a week.
Oh, lovely. So how many checks would you like to order?
Well, before I do, are they the best option, traveller's checks?
Well, they're certainly safer than taking cash. If they get lost or stolen, they can be replaced, usually within 24 hours. It's a good idea to have a small amount of cash, though, for snacks and taxis, that sort of thing.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. What about my credit card? Are there any charges for using it abroad?
No, it's debit cards that get charged for ATM withdrawals, not credit cards. And remember, anything you buy with the card might be covered by insurance. So if something you buy turns out to be faulty or...
Before you hear more of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 4 to 10. Now listen and answer questions 4 to 10.
So it's probably a good idea to do all three then. Traveller's checks, credit card, some cash, yes?
Yes. So how many traveller's checks would you like?
I was thinking about £300. How long will they take to arrive?
It depends. If you order before 2:30 between Monday and Thursday, you'll have them the next day by 10 a.m. in the branch. Or if we post them to you, you'll have them by 5 p.m.
Oh, but I was hoping I could order them today.
That's okay. Orders taken at any time on Saturday will be here in the branch at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, or delivered to your home by Tuesday at 1:30.
Okay, that's all right. I don't mind waiting until then. Can I order them now?
Yes. Have you got an account with us?
Yes. Here's my credit card.
Thanks. Let's just log in and I can place an order for you. Could you confirm your date of birth?
15th of the 3rd, 1975. What's the commission on the cheques, by the way?
It's 1.5%. That's pretty standard, I think you'll find.
And what happens if I don't spend them all? Will I be able to bring them back?
Yes, no problem. We buy them back and there are no additional charges or conditions of return. So, would you like me to go ahead and place an order?
Yes, yes please.
Will you be coming in to collect them?
I don't think I'll have the chance to come into the branch on Tuesday. Could you send them to my house?
No problem. Can I just check your address? 54 Tavistock Road?
Yes, that's right.
Postcode CB13LR?
That's it, yes.
Okay. So that's £300 worth of traveller's checks.
Yes, please.
Now, what about euros? Would you like to order any?
No, thank you. I still have some at home from the last holiday. I forgot to change them at the airport when we got back. I was going to give them to our daughter, but I'll treat myself for a change, I think.
Good idea. So, £300 in traveller's cheques. Could I ask you to sign here to confirm the order? Thank you. OK, that's done for you. Your cheques will be with you by 1:30 Tuesday. Someone will need to be at home to sign for them. Will that be OK?
Yes, I'll be at work, but my husband will be in. Is that okay?
Yes, that's fine. Have a lovely holiday.
That is the end of part one.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part two.
Part two.
You will hear three students discussing a group project on weather conditions.
First, you have some time to look at questions 11 to 17. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 11 to 17.
So, I think we'd better start planning what we're going to do for our group project. Have you guys had any ideas?
I was thinking we should do something on extreme weather events, but I think Alex had some different ideas.
Yes, maybe we should look into more localised weather conditions and the effects on the immediate environment.
That's a good idea, Alex, but I don't think we'd be able to get much data on that, and we don't really have time to do our own research. What about doing something about the seasons?
I think the seasons might be a bit too wide-reaching, you know, when we take into account the wind patterns and pressure systems.
Maybe you're right.
Well, how about Tom's idea of extreme weather conditions?
Yes, that sounds like a good idea. It's easy to break down into separate parts, and it certainly sounds more interesting.
I'd quite like to cover monsoons. I've been doing some reading on them, and they're quite interesting.
Well, that sounds good. We should maybe take two areas each. That would make it easier for us to focus.
Well, we've got lots to choose from. We could do blizzards, heat waves, droughts, cyclones. There are loads. Why don't you do blizzards too, Tom?
I don't fancy doing them, but I wouldn't mind doing something on floods. They're linked to monsoons, I think, so it will be an easy transition. What do you fancy doing, Alex?
Well, I could always cover winds.
But that isn't really extreme enough.
I could do hurricanes. They're pretty exciting. How about doing cyclones, Emma?
I'd rather do heat waves and droughts, I think. I know a bit about them. I don't know anything about cyclones.
Cyclones are really interesting. I can cover them.
That sounds great. I was thinking about doing cyclones, but I'm happy for you to do them.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 18 to 20. Now listen and answer questions 18 to 20.
Right, shall we get started on some of the content?
Yes, we haven't got that much time. Does anyone know anything about their topics?
I know quite a lot about cyclones.
Do you?
Well, I studied them at high school. You know, cyclones usually start near the equator. They need quite warm water to form. Above the warm water, the vapour in the air forms clouds, and if there is low pressure, then these clouds will start to rotate.
Isn't it also the fact that the Earth rotates too, which makes the clouds spin more?
Yes, that too. Once they begin rotating, they can either lose momentum or keep gathering momentum until they hit land. These ones are called mature cyclones. Luckily, as soon as they hit land, they start to lose momentum and fade away. Just because they don't have the warmth of the ocean underneath.
Well, that's a relief.
They can still be really destructive. They are like a big circle of wind. They blow strongly until the eye of the storm passes, you know, the centre, where everything is really quiet, no wind or anything. But then the other side hits and the winds blow just as strongly, but in the other direction. It's just amazing. Yes, I would really like to cover that.
Well, it looks like we've got it all arranged then.
That is the end of part two.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part three.
Part three.
You will hear a tutor talking to a student during a tutorial. The tutor is giving the student feedback on an essay. First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 24. Now listen and answer questions 21 to 24.
Hello, Jacob. Come in and take a seat. How are you finding the course?
Very good. I'm really enjoying myself.
Good. Well, I've had a look at the first draft of your assignment and it shows a great deal of promise. How well do you think you answered the question?
I think I dealt with the task okay. I spent hours in the library reading up on the subject, so I feel confident I answered the question. I'm not sure about my Spanish, though.
Well, for a first draft, I was very happy with the content. You've included all the important points, and you've given a very balanced argument, so I'm pleased with that. I think one area you need to work on is organisation.
Yes, my other tutor said the same thing about another piece of writing. My ideas weren't organised logically, she said.
Well, to be fair, I think the order of your ideas here is fine. It's your paragraphing that's the problem. If you look at this page, it's difficult to actually see your organisation. Your ideas are in the right order, but I can't make the organisation out very well because there aren't any paragraphs.
Yes, I see what you mean. Perhaps if I left a line between paragraphs, it would make it clearer.
Yes, that's an excellent idea. Have a look at paragraphs in books, magazines, newspapers, that kind of thing. There's no need to read everything. Just pay attention to how paragraphs are presented.
Before you hear more of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 25 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 25 to 30.
Okay. I'll have a look at some of my friends' work as well. They don't seem to have this problem. What about the style of the writing? Is that okay? I've never really learnt how to write formally, so I'm always a bit worried about this when I write an essay.
The register is very good, Jacob. No problem at all. You've used lots of nice set expressions we'd expect to find in a piece of writing like this, and used them very naturally.
That's good. What about my Spanish?
Your basic grammar is okay. You haven't made many mistakes, so that's good. What I would suggest is trying to experiment more with advanced sentence structures. Yours tend to be on the short side. That's okay when short sentences are required, but sometimes combining two sentences into one can make the essay flow more naturally.
Have you got anything I can use to practice that? Any books or websites I could visit?
Yes, no problem. I'll give you one of our worksheets in a minute. You can take it away and work on it before you write your second draft. Finally, another thing you could think about is using more advanced vocabulary. Again, the words you've used are fine, but there are more advanced synonyms that would fit more appropriately in an essay like this.
Well, I've bought a thesaurus.
Yes, that's just what you need. As you can see, I've underlined where I think you could make changes, but I haven't suggested any synonyms. Use your thesaurus to try and find some alternatives.
That is the end of part three.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part four.
Part four.
You will hear a lecture on changes in family structure.
First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 40. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 40.
We are all familiar with the nuclear family, which has been the dominant family structure in the UK for the last 60 years at least. However, recent changes show that our idea of the traditional nuclear family as the cornerstone of British family life is changing. There have been emerging patterns which are eroding this structure, namely, the rise of step families, cohabitation, lone parenting, and the rapid increase in those living alone. We are going to explore these areas in turn and look at their effect in terms of the family. Firstly, step families are becoming more and more common. Step families are created when one or both partners have a child or children from a previous relationship. In 1980, the percentage of children under 13 who were living with one parent and their new partner was just 4%. In 2008, this figure had increased to 20%. The USA has seen an even greater rise. New statistics show that almost half of under 13s are living in a step family. Now, we can still call the step family structure a nuclear family, as it does follow the structure of two parents and dependent children. However, it also creates somewhat of a nuclear blur. Stepbrothers and sisters may belong to two family units, so where do we draw the line at which family they belong to? Cohabitation, when partners do not marry yet live together as a family, has also increased. In 2006, of the 17.5 million families in Britain, nearly 3 million of these comprised unmarried couples. What does this mean to the nuclear family? Firstly, the traditional view of a nuclear family requires married parents, so we can't put these types of family under this umbrella. Statistics show that even if cohabiting couples have children, they are more likely to separate than their married equivalents. Lastly, we need to look at the rise of the DINKS, which stands for Dual Income, No Kids. As Clark and Henwood outline, many cohabiting couples are choosing a life without children, putting consumer spending first. Lone parenting is a relatively recent family structure, which has rapidly grown in the last half century. In 1972, only one in 14 children lived in a lone parent family. When we compare this with today's figure of one in four, we can see that this is a rapid increase. In the past, lone parenthood was overwhelmingly the result of a death of a parent. Nowadays, however, it is increasingly a choice. Some sociologists argue that this increase is due to the outlook of women. Where women once were willing to accept an unhappy or abusive marriage, now many will choose lone parenthood. Often, this can be just a transitory phase before they find a new partner. This view of women's attitudes and lone parenting is highly debated because some figures show that the largest group of lone parents are mothers who have never married. You can find counter-arguments for these ideas in Butler and Jones. One difficulty for single parents is that they are a social group who are much more likely to suffer from poverty and hardship. They are more likely to live in rented accommodation and have childcare issues. Lastly, an increasing number of people are choosing to live alone. The number of people living alone in Britain has more than doubled in the last 20 years. In 1990, just over 4 million people lived alone. Now this figure has reached 8.5 million, an incredibly rapid growth, which has had enormous effects on the traditional nuclear family. This number represents a great chunk of the population who, either by choice or necessity, are outside the traditional family unit. Some think that these changes may not help the community. In fact, there are many arguments that this rise in alternative household structures will create a more isolationist and less community-based society, where close bonds, which are usually formed within the family, have no place. Leaving aside whether or not the housing even exists for this boom, an important factor which must be looked at is the disproportionate expense for those living on their own. By this, I mean the burden of all costs is shouldered by one wage instead of two, and of course, one person is using the energy which could be shared between a group, having a greater impact on the environment too. However, on a more positive note, people, especially women, are proving to be extremely
That is the end of part four.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.